Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for being here. This is the Thursday afternoon, October 27th, 2022 session of the Portland City Council. It feels like we were just here because we were. Welcome. Please call the roll.
Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty. Wheeler.
Here. Thank you. And Megan, it's good to see you today, and we really appreciated Keelan being here yesterday and spending a long day with us. So hopefully we won't burn you out today. Thank you for being here. Colleagues, we're going to hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. How could I forget?
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before City Council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony and resolutions, reports, or first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. Presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in a person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. First up is item 904, an emergency ordinance.
Adopt the FY 2022-23 Fall Technical Supplemental Budget and make other budget-related changes.
Colleagues, welcome. And today, of course, we're going to review and then vote on the Fall Supplemental Budget Ordinance, which is the primary deliverable of the Fall Budget Monitoring Process, otherwise known as the Fall Bump. The fall bump allows the city to make technical adjustments in order to true up budgets between fiscal years. During the fall bump process, bureaus may also appropriate new resources or request general fund contingency for urgent and unforeseen needs that can't be accommodated within their current year budget appropriation. This year, council has agreed to hold off on making any general fund contingency allocation decisions until early November. We'll hold a work session on November 10th to discuss this further and anticipate bringing a general fund allocation ordinance to council for consideration on November 17th. Today's ordinance includes adjustments to non-general fund allocations, the creation of positions with non-general fund resources, realignments and technical changes across all funds, and general fund encumbrance carryovers. Sounds like exciting stuff. This afternoon, City Budget Director Jessica Kennard is going to walk us through the current ordinance. Then we'll hear and second any amendments and then take public testimony before final deliberations and voting. And just a preview, Commissioner Hardesty had originally intended to introduce an amendment today. She and I have discussed it, and I'll give an update on that when we get to the amendments process. She would like to have been here today, but she had a commitment that did not allow her to be here. So with that, I'll turn this over to Director Kennard to take us through the fall supplemental budget ordinance.
Thank you, Mayor.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you as well. Good afternoon, Council. So we're pulling up a presentation now for viewers at home. I'm Jessica Kennard, for the record, the city's budget director. I'm joined here by Jane Marie Ford and Robert Cheney, our supplemental budget coordinators in the city budget office. And I'm here to walk you through the fall supplemental budget ordinance in front of you today. So as the mayor mentioned, the fall supplemental budget ordinance is part of the fall budget monitoring process, which is otherwise known as the bump. The fall bump is primarily meant to address technical adjustments to true up budgets between fiscal years. We'll start today by providing an overview of the fall bump process. Then we will spend the majority of our time walking through some of the more notable changes in the ordinance in front of you today as filed. The fall bump includes nearly 200 changes that are predominantly technical in nature. City Budget Office analysts have reviewed each change, and in the discussion today, we will only be highlighting changes that we find notable due to the size of the change or due to the operational or policy implications of the change. This includes general fund encumbrance carryovers, which refer to carryovers of general fund discretionary resource from one fiscal year to the next. We will then talk about realignments across bureaus and within bureaus. We will then review changes in position authorization in various bureaus. And finally, we will talk about increases to next year's general fund base budget through current appropriation level or CAL target adjustments and conclude with a review of available general fund discretionary resources. The ordinance as filed recognizes available general fund excess balance resources, but it does not appropriate any general fund contingency resources to bureaus. We will discuss this more in a couple of slides. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the timeline of our four major budget processes every year. In turquoise, we have our three supplemental budget processes, which provide opportunities to make changes and true-ups to the current year budget. These processes are shorter than the annual budget process because supplemental budget processes are meant to solely address technical issues and urgent mid-year needs. Within the general fund, only one-time resources are typically available to address urgent one-time needs during these mid-year processes. The city's primary budget process is our annual budget development process, which you can see here in the darker color, and lasts at least 8 months, with some bureaus working on this process for the majority of the year. The annual budget process is where the city makes the majority of its major budget decisions, and the timeline is structured to allow for more thoughtful and engaged proposal development and decision making. Pending the results of the annual financial forecast, the council makes appropriation decisions around both one-time and ongoing general fund discretionary resources as part of this annual budget development process. Next slide, please. So this year's fall bump process is slightly different than in prior years, which the mayor alluded to in his opening remarks. Today, council is considering a fall supplemental budget that includes all of the regular fall bump adjustments, except for the allocation of any general fund contingency resources. We will then hold a council work session on November 10th, where our city economist will provide information around our financial outlook. I will provide summary information on recent investments, and we will hold a discussion on requests for one-time general fund contingency resources. Finally, the mayor's office intends to bring forward a general fund allocation ordinance for council consideration on Thursday, November 17th, and this will be the opportunity for the council to allocate one-time general fund contingency resource. And Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you. Just so I'm clear, because this process is a little bit different from the bumps that we've dealt with in the past. So today we're just dealing with technical adjustments. However, as I look at the budget, there are some general fund allocations, which I have some interest in exploring with my colleagues on council. So today is not the day to put forward, say, an amendment on that. If I wanted to bring forward an amendment that touched on general fund dollars, when would I do that?
So the one thing that we are working with today that is related to general fund are general fund encumbrance carryovers, and we have to address those in order to recognize our available excess balance. You could choose to bring an amendment today related to those particular allocations, or you could choose to hold it for the general fund allocation ordinance. Either one of those processes is acceptable. What we will do today is we will allow for the carryovers that are filed. And if you choose to hold an amendment till later, that money will stay in the Bureau's budgets for the time being, and then you would make a motion at the later time to change the budget with the rest of the general fund changes.
Okay, thank you, Director. I appreciate that clarification. I'm not sure if I'm tracking everything. I think as we get into the discussion, I'll voice up some of the things I'd like to explore more, and I can rely on perhaps your advice and the advice from my colleagues on council as to when and where is the appropriate moment for me to bring forward these amendments.
Sounds good. Thank you, Commissioner. Next slide, please. So encumbrance carryovers allow bureaus to request unspent resources from the prior year to be carried over and reallocated for one-time costs that are not part of the bureau's regular operating budget. It's largely a technical adjustment that ensures that funding that was contracted out in the prior year is available in the current fiscal year when the services are going to be delivered and when the corresponding expenses are going to hit bureau budgets. For this year, however, special guidance did allow bureaus to request carryover for non-encumbered costs related to one-time allocations that were approved by council last year. And this included the recognition of the fact that council allocated a large amount of one-time resource last year, and resources were slower to go out the door due to procurement and staffing capacity issues. So this year, we're processing a much larger number and value of encumbrance carryovers. You can see $24.3 million of general fund encumbrance carryovers on this slide. This was expected as bureaus received, again, a significant amount of one-time funding last year, much of which that was allocated in the fall bump, which was, you'll recall, in late November of last year. So most of these allocations are in the process of being spent, but bureaus and programs need more time to fully expend the resources. The largest encumbrance carryovers, including this ordinance that you see in this slide, $6.7 million for the Joint Office of Homeless Services, which is primarily for shelter capital costs and is shown here under the Housing Bureau banner, as the Housing Bureau sends funding to the county for the Joint Office of Homeless Services. There's also $3.6 million in Prosper Portland and $1 million in Portland Fire and Rescue for technical accounting corrections and for accruals. And also within special appropriations, there's $2.4 million for a variety of projects across various programs, and also $1.5 million in special appropriations for Reimagine Oregon. And then, yes, Commissioner, did you have a question?
Were you pausing for me?
Oh, I thought I saw a hand.
I will have a question.
Okay.
At some point, I'd like to learn a little bit more about, I think, a couple of these encumbrance carryovers. Is this the moment to ask those questions, or should I wait till later in the presentation?
Later in the presentation.
I think this is a good time to ask those questions, yes.
Okay. I'll let you get to the end of your slide, though.
Okay. So I was just going to say that in the interest of time, I'm not going to go into more depth on these items, but we do have line item detail for these encumbrance carryovers. It's included in Exhibit 4, which is included in the filing and available online for folks at home that want to look at that. And then, Council, you each have in your packet of hard materials, you have this exhibit as well. So if you'd like to look through the individual line items, you can do so. And with that, I was planning on pausing for questions.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, Commissioner Mapps, go ahead.
Thank you. Madam Director, could you unpack for us the $6.7 million general fund encumbrance for the Portland Housing Bureau? What's that program for?
So primarily two different types of allocations. Most of this was funding that was allocated in last year's fall bump. I believe about $6.2 million of one-time resource was allocated for shelter capital costs. It was appropriated by the council. And then roughly $500,000 was allocated for navigation workers and navigation costs. I think we have, the interim director of the Housing Bureau is on the line if you have further questions about the contract with the city.
Sure. So do we know, is it clear to us how that $6.7 million is going to be spent? I was under the impression, for example, that some of these dollars, we had a pretty clear idea about where they were going to go. And let's say about $5 million of these dollars, I could not really get a clear answer on what the plan was for them. Is that correct? Or?
So I will defer. I had some initial information from the Bureau on what had been spent to date, but that is likely outdated. So okay. I'd like to ask Interim Director Molly Rogers to potentially speak to the status of some of these allocations, if she's available.
Yes, I'm here. And I also have Jennifer Chang, the contract manager, on the call as well. We believe we've received invoices for a portion of these funds and not for all of them thus far. And we would need to do additional outreach to back to the Joint Office to get an update from them on their expenditures for the full 6.7. Jennifer, do you have any more details from them?
Yes, hello, Council. My name is Jennifer Chang, she, her pronouns, Portland Housing Bureau. And so I am part of my roles oversee the IGA, Joint Office IGA, with the city. And in terms of these funds specifically, they represent three different decision packages. And two of them primarily, they include two that are specific to emergency shelter costs. And they comprise about a total of $6.2 million of that total amount that's being carried over. And then the smaller portion is specific to what Jessica had mentioned, the homeless services navigation and is programmed related to staffing, retention, and specific encampments. So out of the total amount, we do have year-end invoices from last fiscal year, which are the most recent that we have received. We have not received the first quarter invoice from the joint office as of this current fiscal year. It's usually due by the end of September or mid-October. So we should be receiving that soon. And of that, that $5 million, which is emergency shelter capital costs, we don't have specifics in terms of where they may be programmed, although they may likely are programmed into different shelters. And that's something we need to contact the joint office and receive their invoice related to those funds.
Do we know when, so we expect that invoice to come in any minute now,
yes,
right?
It usually comes
in mid-October and we're kind of late October, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it's a little delayed. Typically the first quarter invoice comes usually shortly following the conclusion of the first quarter. So yes. So that should be coming very shortly. And we can also send a reminder to receive it.
Well, that would be great. When that invoice comes in, if my office could get some sort of update on how these dollars have been spent and if we have a clear sense of where these dollars are likely to go next. And I'll just lay my cards on the table, colleagues. If there should be some amount of dollars in this fund which are not programs, I certainly hope that we would consider setting these aside and perhaps earmarking them for our houseless resolutions that council is also considering. So thank you very much for helping me explore that. And I do have other questions, but on a different topic, but I also want to create some space for my colleagues. Colleagues, do you have any questions?
No, please go ahead.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead? sorry, I'm losing my voice.
Oh, no problem. It's
people rejoice.
We've been doing a lot of chatting lately. Second, I'd like to learn a little bit more about special appropriations, especially the special appropriations coming out of Reimagine Oregon. I get the impression that maybe there are two things going on here. Maybe $1.5 million, which comes from the general fund, and then there's another pot, which is $1 million, which kind of comes from cannabis dollars. Can you explain to us what's happening there?
Absolutely. I will. I'll explain sort of the origin of and the different types of funding sources that support an allocation to Reimagine Oregon, and then I believe that we have someone from Office of Community and Civic Life on the line that can speak more specifically to the movement in the fall bump. So I believe it was in the fall of 2020 that Council voted to approve a one-time general fund allocation of $1.5 million for Reimagine Oregon for what was at the time determined to be proposed to be a community-led budgeting process with Reimagine Oregon. So it was $1.5 million of one-time general fund plus $1.9 million of ongoing recreational cannabis fund resources. And so the $1.5 million of one-time general fund has stayed at the same amount, and that $1.9 million of ongoing cannabis funds has grown by inflation every year since and has been building a balance while internally within the city, we went through some staffing transitions, and externally within Reimagine Oregon, they've gone through some transitions as well. I believe that council actually appropriated last spring the $1.5 million, moved it to special appropriations to send it to, I believe, the Urban League, and voted to send that general fund to the Urban League, and then it has remained in special appropriations and has not yet been allocated to that organization. And Sheila, our grants manager, is also on the call to speak to that. So let's take the $1.5 million first, and we'll ask Sheila Craig, our grants manager, to speak to that allocation.
Sure.
And then we can ask, is Director Montoya on? Or?
Oh, wonderful.
Hi. Director Montoya is here in person, and so then he can speak to the SEED program allocation. Is Sheila here in person or is she on? Okay, I'm supposed to look at the screen. Sheila Craig, if you're on the line.
I'm online. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, Council. Yes, the $1.5 million was moved to special appropriations, and we have had ongoing communication with the organization. But at this time, we have not moved that forward to an actual grant award with them to allocate those funds to the organization. We have had some issues with communication, and I think also the organization had some changes in management. So there have just been many delays and some lack of communication to move that project forward.
So what's, in terms of what the proposals before us today, what's the proposal for that $1.5 million in general fund dollars that currently is kind of earmarked towards Reimagine Oregon?
So we have, because it was allocated in special appropriations, and at this time, we have not received any communications to pull that funding. We have asked for it as program carryover, feeling it's still the intent of council offices to move that program forward.
Do we know how it's going to be? Do we know what Reimagine Oregon was supposed to do with these dollars?
At this point in time, we have not received a scope of work from them.
Here I just kind of have a message or a thought that I'd like to share with my colleagues on council. You know, Reimagine Oregon seems to have had some difficulty getting these dollars out the door, and they seem to be having some difficulty even just communicating with council. At some point, I don't know if today is the day to do it or if it's something we want to do in mid-November, but I certainly would like to consider taking that $1.5 million from Reimagine Oregon and setting it aside to help fund our houselessness initiative, which we are considering in the mayor's and Commissioner Ryan's five houselessness resolutions. Those are the main programs. Yeah, those are the main program questions I have today. When we get deeper into the meeting, I will ask for advice from staff and my colleagues as to when and how we want to consider the two ideas today. And again, the two ideas today that I put forward are pulling or taking a look at unallocated or unprogrammed dollars that are currently going to the joint office. There's $5 million. There's up to $5 million there. I think that we're not quite clear what we're how we're going to spend it. At some point, we'll get an invoice and they'll tell us what the plan is there. Reimagine Oregon is my second proposal. There's $1.5 million that we've been trying to give to Reimagine Oregon. They haven't been able to tell us what they plan to do with it. And I think we should consider diverting those funds towards, I think, one of the top priorities in our city, which is to house the homeless and implement the resolutions that the mayor and Commissioner Ryan have put forward. And I see we have the director of civic life here, too. And I can actually give you a break today. I know there's some Reimagine Oregon dollars that you want to, I think, move into seeds. Sounds good to me. And that ends the questions that I have at the moment.
Good, thank you, Commissioner. Did you have a question, Commissioner?
There's a question, or can we? If
my colleagues have any thoughts or reactions,
and just understanding, Director Kennard's not done with her presentation.
Sorry, guys.
On this particular piece, she likes to answer as we go.
Okay.
So if you do have questions on anything we've heard so far.
I don't have questions. I just want to say that I'm not prepared to move and to move any money from Reimagine Oregon without having talked to them first. So that's just where I am.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that conversation. So moving on to the realignments, we have a handful of realignments included in the ordinance in front of you across bureaus. And this includes about $123,000 and one FTE associated with the Boy Strength Program. It's being realigned from Community Safety Division to the Office of Violence Prevention. So I should say these are all cost neutral. They're just moving programs from one place to another place in the city. There's $2.4 million and two FTE for the graffiti program that's being realigned from the Office of Community and Civic Life to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. There's approximately $136,000 in one policing-focused equity analyst that's being realigned from the Office of Equity and Human Rights to the Portland Police Bureau's Equity and Inclusion Office. All positions and budget for the Office for Community Technology is being realigned to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. $150,000 in one small grant technical assistance position is being realigned from the Grants Management Division to the Bureau of Emergency Management. And a total of approximately $1 million in anticipated vacancy savings funding from the Portland Police Bureau is being realigned to fund projects and staffing supporting community safety needs. Next slide, please. And then within bureaus, there are a number of internal bureau realignments also occurring in the ordinance as filed. Within environmental services, there's $20 million that's being reallocated from 9 capital projects for expenses for the secondary treatment expansion program, also known as STEP. The council heard about this project, I believe, in early September. Within the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, there's a number of technical adjustments to streamline and resource trash pickup and livability. Within the Office for Community and Civic Life, which we just mentioned, they're reallocating $1 million of funding that was originally allocated to Reimagine Oregon to the Social Equity and Educational Development Initiative to support additional grants and a position. Within transportation, there's $800,000 that they're receiving from the Community Safety Division to support their Safer Summer Initiative through the temporary installation of traffic calming infrastructure. Also in transportation, there's a new infrastructure development services manager that's funded by water, environmental services, transportation, and parks. This is related to the multi-bureau permitting improvement process, which is being championed by Commissioner Ryan's office and Commissioner Mapps's office. The impact reduction program is drawing $4.2 million from contingency, which was funded actually through a carryover, to continue their expanded cleanup efforts. And finally, the Public Environment Management Office, also known as PIMO, is drawing $3.9 million also from facilities contingency, which is from a carryover, to create their budget, which includes adding 4 FTE. Next slide, please. So as is customary, several funds across the city are truing up their fund balances as part of the ordinance in front of you today. In this slide, we note 3 fund balances that are notable due to the size of the true-up and or due to council's historical interest in these particular funds. The Portland Clean Energy Fund is recognizing about $105 million in beginning fund balance. This includes $42.2 million for grants that have been awarded, but just not yet contracted. Parks Local Operating Levy is recognizing $14.2 million in beginning fund balance. And the Emergency Communications Fund, which is the operating fund for the Bureau of Emergency Communications, was allowed to retain its general fund underspending per a budget note that council adopted last June. As a result, they're retaining $2.7 million in funding. So this slide shows the list of authorized position changes that are happening in this ordinance. These are all funded with non-general fund resources. I'm not going to walk through each one. I'll just highlight some of the larger numbers. And if you have questions, you may ask them when I've done walking through the highlights. So within the Bureau of Development Services, they're converting. There were 12 positions that council actually helped jumpstart with the general fund one-time allocation last spring. They're converting those 12 positions to permanent with their own resources. And then they're also adding another 5 FTE internally for specific classifications and work groups. Within the Office for Community Technology, as we mentioned before, those 12 positions are being realigned, and that's part of why the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has an addition of 13 positions. Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is also receiving positions from the graffiti program in the Office for Community and Civic Life. Within the Bureau of Transportation, there's a position, as I mentioned, for the Infrastructure Services Development Manager. There's a position for the Safer Summer Initiative. And then there's additional positions to support their ongoing operating projects. And then in Parks and Recreation, there's 2 positions for tree planting, which is funded through tree code fee increases. There's a recreation coordinator position and 3 recreation leaders for staff stabilization. So again, all of these are funded outside of general fund resource. Any questions on any of those? Okay. So as mentioned earlier, there are no ongoing general fund resources available in the fall supplemental budget process, as those are forecasted in the annual budget development process. However, council does have the opportunity to preemptively increase general fund base budget allocations before the forecast is created by directing a current appropriation level or CAL target increase in the fall bump. If approved, these adjustments on the slide will result in providing ongoing general fund resources to bureaus and programs in advance of the construction of the annual forecast. As these types of changes predetermine the allocation of ongoing resources before a full annual process, these types of adjustments are typically reserved for technical or required changes or items that are of a high enough priority to the council that you all are willing to prioritize funding over other requests that you've not yet considered. And so the first two of the items that you see on this list are technical and they're required. The first item is the result of a financial review of the city's overhead funding model, where resources are pooled across all city funds to jointly support programs that indirectly provide services to all bureaus. The city budget office reviewed the current model with the city's overhead committee and determined that a handful of programs that previously were funded with overhead resources are no longer appropriately scoped to be funded by overhead resources. So the result is an increased cost to the general fund of approximately $800,000, which will result in a commensurate savings for non-general fund funds such as transportation, development services, and water and environmental services. The second item is an adjustment of approximately $200,000 to support ProTech employees funded with general fund discretionary resources in accordance with the bargaining agreement that council adopted last July. And the last two are also technical changes that align with other changes in the budget. The Office for Violence Prevention's 23-24 base budget is being moved from special appropriations to the Community Safety Division, and the Office for Community Technologies base budget for next year is also being moved to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. In addition, I just want to highlight that the ordinance contains language that's amending financial policy, which will enable the city economist to assume a reasonable level of increased personnel costs in the annual forecast, which will enable for better financial planning around our general fund resources. Next slide, please. So while this ordinance does not appropriate any general fund discretionary resources, the ordinance is recognizing and depositing into contingency a level of excess general fund that's the result of the general fund ending balance. The slide shows that we ended the fiscal year with nearly $162 million in total general fund ending balance, and we assumed we would have just over $102 million in ending balance in order to support our budgeted beginning balance for this year. We received a small return to the general fund in this process, and then we subtracted resources for carryovers, true-ups, and allocations that were previously approved by the council. Those adjustments leave the city with a total of $27.7 million in excess available general fund discretionary balance. Per city financial policy, half of that resource is deposited into the capital set-aside account to be allocated on infrastructure maintenance or replacement of projects relating to emergency preparedness, parks and recreation, or transportation. The other half of the resource, or $13.85 million, is being deposited into the general fund contingency account. Next slide, we'll show you the balance of the general fund contingency account. So we started the fiscal year with just over $3 million in our general fund unrestricted contingency account, and then adding that 13.85 yields a total of $16.86 million in contingency resources that are available for appropriation on urgent, one-time, current needs. The Budget Office has analyzed Bureau requests for general fund resources, which were submitted last September. And we've made recommendations both on the request for resources and we've made recommendations on how the funding should be reserved in contingency for other likely current year needs. Council will take up a discussion on the request for these resources at our work session on November 10th.
Can I jump in here?
Commissioner Matt?
That is the conclusion of my presentation.
Okay,
perfectly.
Great.
Well, we could have gotten that 5 seconds different. I know, perfect timing. Commissioner Max.
It's the Zoom lag. Can we go back to the capital set aside slide?
Yeah. The general fund discretion ending balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that up? Back one more. Capital set aside, I think, is the one before this.
Yeah. There you go.
Can you remind us what the capital set aside is for? What's that fund for?
So it's a financial policy, binding city financial policy, and it's related to our asset maintenance and making sure we fund our deferred maintenance backlog. So by financial policy, the funding that is put into the capital set aside, which includes 50% of our annual excess balance, as well as 50% of our forecasted one-time resources, are put into that account, and they should only be spent on major maintenance infrastructure, new, but it has to be the replacement of aging infrastructure or major maintenance on aging infrastructure.
for projects that are in the Parks Bureau that are related to Parks and Recreation, transportation, or emergency preparedness.
Okay, so so this is repairing stuff over at parks, roads, and emergency. Can you remind us of the recent history of this? Did we have a capital set aside last year?
We did. The policy was enacted in the mid-2010s. And it has been responsible for tens of millions of dollars that have gone towards our infrastructure backlog costs. In the last year, we did waive financial policy last fall to be able to put more of the available one-time general fund resources towards non-capital set-aside projects.
Like what?
So last year, you may recall, we had a significant amount of balance, and we allocated a fair amount of resource to a variety of projects. And the focus of the council at the time was on addressing homelessness and economic recovery and public safety. And so I think there were allocations that went to all three of those buckets, but those were the focus of a lot of the allocations of that.
Okay, thank you. I think I do remember that. And here I'm just going to talk to my colleagues on council a little bit. You know, we both have pressing needs like houselessness, which emerge. We need to really step up to those. At the same time, we have ongoing obligations to maintain our infrastructure, our roads and parks. And we see it by our colleagues, Commissioner Hardesty, who, if she were here, she would remind us how many X billions of dollars she's behind on roads. And I know Commissioner Rubio has done great work trying to catch up with the need for capital improvements in our parks too. And I'll just note, I have concerns about dipping into our capital set aside, because I do think that maintaining our infrastructure is important. You know, a road fixed today or a pipe fixed today is much cheaper than having a road fail or a pipe fail down the road. I don't have a formula for telling us when we should go into the capital set aside and when we shouldn't, but I think that we should think about that carefully as we consider the needs that we will face in the next fiscal year. Thank you.
Any other questions on the presentation or comments? Okay, I'll turn it back over to you, Mayor.
Very good. Okay, so this is the time when we consider if people want to make amendments now, and Commissioner Mapp started us off with that conversation. Commissioner Hardesty couldn't be here today, and she had asked me originally if I would introduce an amendment on her behalf, on behalf of Portland Fire and Rescue. We had a further conversation about that, and she'd agreed to hold off on that amendment until we get to the policy discussions in early November. But I just briefly want to note what that is, just so my colleagues are aware, and Director Kennard, you'll have the opportunity to bring this information back to us and refresh our memories. And I'll do my level best to expound upon this, but I believe it was 3 years ago, it was some number of years ago, we passed a budget note. When was that regarding the rapid response vehicles?
It was in, it was a year and a half ago. It seems like 3 years.
Oh my goodness, time flies when you're having fun. So a year and a half ago, we passed a budget note with regard to the rapid response vehicles. There was some discussion at the time about the model that we used for the deployment of Portland Fire and Rescue resources. We had passed a budget note that continued the funding. It's my understanding that that budget note would sunset at the end of this fiscal year. So Commissioner Hardesty was interested in re-engaging the conversation around rapid response vehicles, as well as a potential continuation of the budget note, if not in letter, then in spirit. And she wanted me to mention that she will be bringing this conversation forward to us in November. I also just wanted to put on the record, somewhat related to the conversation of this budget note, had she introduced an amendment today, I was going to ask for a further discussion around other aspects. I like a lot of
understand that there are a lot of community safety functions in our local government. I know Chief Boone is listening in, and I want to tell her how much I appreciate her leadership team for the incredible work that they've been doing during very, very challenging times. And while we work on staffing and funding issues, I suggest we also revisit the conversation around Portland Fire and Rescue's facility needs. I know that's a conversation Commissioner Hardesty has been having with the chief. There are some very old buildings within the Portland Fire and Rescue purview. For example, the Fire Marshal campus. I would argue that there are some fire staff who deserve better training spaces in which to work. And I know at some point in the past, Portland Fire and Rescue completed a facilities needs assessment, and as well as a potential facilities siting options evaluation. And if people on the council would agree with me, what I would like to raise, it doesn't really require an amendment, but if others agree, I'd like to welcome a proposal for the fall bump in November to refresh and expand on the past facility needs assessment. In other words, I'm not asking for a complete redo of that facilities assessment, but I'm asking for a refresh on that. And Chief, I believe members of my team reached out to you earlier, and I'm wondering if that's a possibility that we could get a refresh on that. Chief Boone, are you still online?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Council. Yes, so yes to your question out there.
So, great, and we're happy to work with you on that. And of course, I'll engage the commissioner in charge, but that's just an area of interest that I'd like to know a little bit more about. I know that you went through the effort to put that study together, and I'd like to pull it off the shelf and take a hard look at that particular piece of it. Thank you, Chief. And again, thanks for your hard work on that. Commissioner Mapps, I don't know if you gave any further thought to your proposals.
Well, here, yeah, this is a great or an appropriate moment for, I think, council to have.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Mapps. Can I ask that Derek Bradley go next?
Because I think
it's in reference
to
what I said, and I want to respect the commissioner's staff. Derek, go ahead.
Thanks, Mayor, members of the council. For the record, my name is Derek Bradley, Interim Chief of Staff for Commissioner Hardesty. Mayor, thank you very much for pointing out the RRV amendment. But I wanted to, while we still had fire online, to mention there's a second amendment that they were hoping to bring around staffing authorization. And just to put it on the record, I was wondering if the chief or one of her team here could just briefly just lay out what we're hoping to return with in regards to that in November.
Yeah, I can fill that in, Mayor and Council. One of the things that we're asking, and it's not an additional cost, it is just a position of authority to move funding from our overtime budget to add 13 additional FTEs within our existing budget.
And Chief and Derek, if I understand correctly, then we'll be bringing forth an amendment during our policy discussions in November on this subject. Is that correct?
That's our expectation. And I believe all council offices have the proposed language distributed to them on both amendments.
Excellent. I look forward to that discussion. Thank you. Sorry, Commissioner Mapps.
Oh, no. That's great. Well, colleagues, I think what I know, or I have a suspicion where we're going to land on the two proposals that I have, that I would like council to consider, either today or in November. I would like this council to consider two options. One is to take a look at the unprogrammed balance in the in that carry over to the joint office and consider setting those dollars aside to help fund our other houselessness initiatives that we're talking about through the resolution process. I would say this is something that we could take up today. I also recognize this deals with the general fund, so it seems like it might be an appropriate topic to kick down the road till November. Is that something I can do? I can bring an amendment in November, and we still have space and time to make that. How does that sound? Does anyone want to move forward today with this, or should we wait till November?
Respecting what Commissioner Rubio said earlier, I think, why don't we wait until the first week of November? I'm very interested in both of your proposals. I'll be completely transparent.
Yeah.
Based on what I've heard so far today, I think they both make a lot of sense. Now, maybe there's something else going on in the ether that I'm not aware of. But from my perspective, they strike me as good proposals that I'd be willing to support, barring any other additional outside information. So I personally think we should just hold this over and have all of the general fund discussions and policy discussions on the same date. It's only, what, 2 weeks from now-ish?
That sounds so. Commissioner Ryan, you're looking pensive. Do you want to jump in here?
Well, I'm just wildly interested in what you're saying, Commissioner Mapps. I would agree that we should wait and do all of the general fund dialogue at the same time.
Okay.
So I'll respect the discipline, but my excitement about the dialogue was what you were witnessing.
Okay. Well, I admire your poker face, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I have quite a poker face.
They don't let me do that anymore. And I think we know where we're going to land with the second one. The second proposal, which I'm interested in pursuing with this council, is to take, I think, that $1.5 million allocation for that has been going to Reimagine Oregon. We're having trouble communicating with them. We don't know how this is going to get programmed. I think there's a consensus on this council that houselessness is our highest priority. I recognize also these are general fund dollars, so it seems like this would, the general fund discussion in November might be the place to have that.
On that note, though, Commissioner Mapps, when was that allocated, Director Kinnard?
So the $1.5 million was originally allocated in the fall of 2020. That pool of resource, however, was reallocated to the Urban League through special appropriations, I believe, last fall. So it was most recently allocated a year ago in the fall. So it has been sitting in special appropriations for a year.
Okay, so we have 7,000 people sleeping on the streets today, and we have $1.5 million that is sitting in a bank account. I think we have an obligation to think about whether or not the Reimagine Oregon is the appropriate home for this. I also recognize and respect the fact that Commissioner Rubio has said that she really wants to check in with Reimagine Oregon around this. That strikes me as being good practice, and I have no problem with that. However, I hope I have my colleagues and staff support for revisiting that $1.5 million allocation in November. Sound good-ish?
Yeah.
And I can do that? When I come back in November, good. I can bring that amendment.
I'd be very interested in that. And I agree with your sense of urgency. These are actually ongoing resources. Are they, or is that one time?
The general fund is one time. There's ongoing recreational cannabis fund resources.
Okay, and how much is that? I know you said
a little over $2 million annually now.
And that is ongoing resources.
And that is ongoing.
Okay,
yes.
Good. And that is good to know. And I share Commissioner Mapp's concern that these resources have been encumbered but not expended this far into the fiscal year at a time when we're facing multiple crises. And I'd much rather have those resources deployed to the streets where they can be of help, rather than sitting in a bank account that's not earning interest, by the way. So I look forward to those proposals.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate my colleagues engaging in this discussion and indulging me in my interest.
Great. Did anybody else have any amendments or discussions before I call for Mayor? I can't drink enough coffee today to fix this, can I? Public testimony. Great. How many people do we have signed up, Megan?
7 individuals.
Very good. That's not too many folks. Why don't we have each of them speak for 3 minutes? And if each could state their name for the record, we'd sure appreciate it.
First, we have Rachel Whiteside.
Hi, Rachel.
Good afternoon. Hello, Mayor, members of council. My name is Rachel Whiteside, and I am the staff union representative for the nearly 900 members at ProTech 17 here at the City of Portland. I was also a City of Portland employee for more than 18 years, so I've seen my share of budgets and adjustments. I am here today to speak in support of the technical budget adjustments that were presented by staff. In particular, the additional positions at the Bureau of Environmental Services that were noted on slides 9 and 11. ProTech 17 has been working with city managers for years to reduce the reliance on contract employees for reasons that go well beyond it being our represented body of work. This includes the cost to city and ratepayers, impacts to our members, and most importantly, equity. It is common knowledge in the development and construction fields that contract employees regularly cost more than a city FTE for the same work. I'm just going to share one example of the high cost of contracting out work that we discovered and shared during the course of our contract negotiations. We found a contract employee at the Water Bureau had been hired as an engineering tech 2, which is a ProTech classification, for $26 an hour. 3 months later, they were promoted to a tech 3 for $31 an hour. And while the workers' pay increased for $5 an hour, it was billed to the city as a $25 an hour increase by the staffing agency. The contract employee may have earned a promotion, but they didn't receive any extra training from their employer or from the city for that matter, and the staffing agency earned a tidy profit. Existing city workers, not all of which are supervisors or managers, are tasked with the heavy load of training new contract employees on bureau processes and policies. This would be the same as any new employee. For example, at BES, it probably takes about a year for these folks to be proficient in the work and familiar with all of the internal processes and policies. But the ongoing churn of contract employees who move on due to limited opportunities for permanent ongoing employment places undue burden on regular employees who are responsible for both training replacements and picking up the drop in productivity. Oh boy, I'm running out of time here. Last I had mentioned equity. The situation creates two classes of employees who are doing the same work side by side. Contract employees don't receive seniority, benefits, or access to the professional development opportunities of regular employees. I'd just like to express our sincere thanks to Commissioner Mapps and his staff for working with ProTech 17 and Bureau Management to examine the issue and take tangible steps towards correcting this longstanding inequity. We are grateful for the work that members of council are doing to examine the budget and bureau staffing needs, and we're committed to continuing to partner with your offices and support workers and responsible use of ratepayer and taxpayer funds. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate your leadership. Commissioner Mapps has a comment or a question.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I just want to jump in. And number one, thank Rachel for her testimony today, and thank ProTech for being a real partner, and more than a partner, really the lead in bringing forth this important change. It's a little wonky, but I do kind of want to pause and make sure my colleagues on council understand what we did here. So essentially, we have BES has contracts where we bring in temporary employees to do important work. What we explored here is instead of spending a lot on temporary employees, let's convert these into permanent employees. By virtue of doing that, you know, we're both being pro-labor, and we're ultimately going to be able to save the city and ratepayers about $20 million. So it's a huge good government win. We couldn't have gotten here without the support of labor and really and creative managers. So this is one I'm really proud of, and I'm really proud of the team that helped us get here. And Rachel, you were a huge part of that. So thanks for being here, and thanks for the good ideas. Let's keep it going.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Sure. Janet Strahl.
Thank you. I am Janet Strahl. I'm the ProTech 17. I'm a steward. I'm also the chapter secretary, and I'm an employee at the Bureau of Environmental Services. I started at the Bureau of Environmental Services as a contract employee and have been permanent for 21 years. The technical budget changes before you include converting 9 contract positions to permanent FTEs at BES. Some of these contract positions have existed for more than a decade. Converting these positions is not only a cost savings, it will improve employee morale and equity at BES. The one reason that I joined the ProTec bargaining team last year was to address the issue of contract employees. And not because they are doing our represented work, but because I witnessed too many contract employees waiting 2, 5, and even 8 years for permanent positions. Our contract now includes guide rails on contracting out our work, and these position conversions are our contract in action. But this is not just a ProTec 17 issue, as Commissioner Mapp said. BES management has the same perspective. Because of long-standing city budgeting practices, it's been impossible to hire needed FTEs, but possible to hire contract employees. Thank you, Commissioner Mapps, and the staff in your office for listening to both ProTec 17 and BES management, and then cutting through the red tape to make these logistical cost-saving positions possible. Beyond the cost savings of converting these positions, this is a compassionate choice. For example, my coworker recently worked for 3 years as a contract employee, and their work was essential to our work group. And they were tasked with mentoring me, a 20-year employee in a new position. For them, a permanent position meant an initial pay cut, but they explained to me that they were willing to lose that income to be on a level playing field with the rest of us. Because no matter how hard we try to include contract employees in a work group, they always know that they don't have access to the same professional development opportunities. They aren't building seniority in their positions. They don't have the same access to vacation and sick leave or holidays or other benefits. Contract employees do the same exact work as permanent employees. Don't they deserve the same compensation? Which is not to say that staffing agencies are bad. These staffing agencies we've worked with over the years have amazing recruiting skills and can take credit for diverse candidates. It is my hope that as our business practice shifts away from contract employees, these agencies can be utilized as recruiters for future permanent positions. Again, I just want to say thank you, Commissioner Mapps, for cutting through the red tape. I want to say thank you to Paul Sudo and other BES managers for sharing the desire and doing the work to get these positions converted. Thank you, City Council, for your time.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Caitlin Day. Okay, we can go to the next person. Garden Siders. All right, Terry Matskit. Edith Gillis. And finally, we have Jesse Johnson.
Hi, everyone from the council city meeting. I'd like to thank Commissioner Mapps for a lot of the points he was making. I do believe that a lot of the funds should go to houselessness. It's a real horrible issue with COVID and everything going on. And yeah, thank you.
Appreciate your being here. Thank you.
And that concludes testimony.
Very good. Thank you. All right. So we are not voting on any amendments today. I'd like to extend my thanks to the City Budget Office for the weeks of work that they put into crafting this ordinance. And I look forward to continuing this conversation, the general fund contingency allocation, with my colleagues during our work session on November 10th. And at this point, since this is an emergency ordinance, we will take up the roll on the technical amendments. Please call the roll.
Mapps?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Wheeler?
I vote aye. Thank you, everybody, for your hard work. The ordinance is adopted. And just to review, we'll continue the conversations about general fund contingency on November 10th. Is that a time certain?
Yes, it's a work session.
Is a work session at what time?
2 p.m. to 5 p.m.
2 p.m. on November 10th for people who are interested in that, and we'll see you there.
Can I ask a quick procedural question? Sure. I haven't been to this particular rodeo before. So I can bring amendments in a work session? Is that what's happening? So the next time we talk about budget, when we come back in November, that'll be a work session. And I have some amendments that I kind of want to put on the table.
So at the work session, we're going to be discussing all of the general fund allocations that council is interested in, all the changes that you're interested in seeing. It's going to be a separate ordinance that we're going to consider on the 17th. So just as with any other ordinance, there are two opportunities to make changes. First is to include any changes in what is originally filed. And so the filing deadline, if the ordinance is coming on the 17th, the filing deadline would be the 8th, or bring amendments as part of the 17th on the hearing.
Okay, I think I understand.
Great. And so any of us should get in touch with you as well if we're interested in crafting amendments either prior or during the work session. Let's all work with
absolutely. And we're also available to provide briefings if you have any questions about what was requested by bureaus. Or if you have any questions about the process, we're available.
Great. Thank you. Colleagues, our next item is a time certain, and it's not till 3:30. Commissioner Ruby.
Can I just say one thing?
Of course.
Because I probably should have said it.
I probably should have said it in my closing comments, but I just want to acknowledge that with some of these technical changes, BPS will be adopting the Office of Community Technology. So I wanted to take this opportunity to acknowledge Director Elizabeth Bettis for all her time leading that office. Elizabeth has always been a strong advocate for digital equity and making sure that the city is doing all it can to advocate for those who do not have affordable access to the internet, which is key to everyone's life these days. And she has and will continue to oversee our work to improve authorization access to the right of way. And that work, while still in process, deserves to be celebrated as well. So just want to take a moment to appreciate her and thank her for all her great leadership over the years. And again, thanks to Director Kennard and her stellar team.
Thank you. Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. You kind of woke us all up. I also want to just take a moment to compliment the hours of collaboration and teamwork that went into creating the infrastructure services manager. It's really going to bring better efficiency to our permitting system. We have four bureaus providing shared investment, water, environmental services, parks, along with transportation to make this whole. And I know we talked about this last spring, but the fact is we had to do it. And that's what happened. And this is how we do cross-bureau system work. And that's what we're about right now, to bring our city back. So I want to acknowledge all the people that have been involved in those conversations. And thank you, Jessica, and your team.
Very good. Colleagues, our next item on the West Portland Town Center plan, if you're waiting for that, that's a time certain. We can't start that till 3:30. So why don't we take a 25-minute recess, and we will reconvene at 3:30. We're in recess. Waiting for you. Where have you been? Megan. All right, we are back in session. Item 905, please, time certain.
Adopt the West Portland Town Center Plan goals and policies, visions, action charts, land use concept and circulation growth concept diagrams, and coordinated growth strategy for zoning and infrastructure. Amend the comprehensive plan map, zoning map, Title 33, and citywide design guidelines.
Colleagues, we're back today to continue our discussion of the recommended draft of the West Portland Town Center Plan. On October 12th, as you'll recall, council took public testimony on this item. Then we closed the record for oral testimony. The record for written testimony closed Friday, October 14th at 5 p.m. Today, we'll hear a brief presentation from Bureau Planning and Sustainability staff on issues raised by council at the October 12th hearing, and then on a few technical amendments for council consideration. This item will come back to council on November 16th for a vote on the recommended plan, the ordinances, and the findings. I'd like to turn this over to Commissioner Rubio for any opening remarks and to introduce our presenters. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. I'm looking forward to hearing from BPS staff on the topics raised during the hearing and the consideration of any amendments that may be proposed by city commissioners. And again, I'd like to thank my colleagues and council for the ongoing bureau collaboration that has been and will continue to be a part of this work. So now I'll turn it over to BPS's chief planner, Patricia Diefenderfer, to get us started with today's item.
Good afternoon. Is this working okay? Great. Good afternoon, Mayor, Council members, Commissioners. My name is Patricia Diefenderfer. I'm the Chief Planner for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As you noted, today you will hear a very brief presentation from BPS with responses to a few of the issues that were raised in the October 12th hearing and during the presentation. And so I'm just going to, without further ado, hand it over to the staff and introduce Joan Fredrickson and Bill Cunningham.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for your time today and your interest in this work. My name is Joan Fredrickson. I'm a planner at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm joined here by my colleague, Bill Cunningham. Do you want to introduce yourself, Bill?
Bill Cunningham, working with Joan on the West Portland Town Center Plan from Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
I'm just getting my presentation up, excuse me. Thank you, and sorry about that delay. As Patricia noted, we will be doing a brief presentation on topics that came up during the hearing for the council on October 12th. While the presentation is fairly brief, we welcome any additional questions or discussion and are happy to engage in those. So today we will be covering just a quick overview of the town center boundary delineation. There were some questions that came up around an area and whether that should be included in the town center. We'll also spend some more time unpacking a little bit the affordable housing and displacement topics as they relate to the West Portland Town Center plan. And then we will go over the small package of technical amendments that we have. So the first topic is we'd like to touch on relates to the determination of the town center boundary. You heard, as I noted, some testimony questioning inclusion of the area bordered by Southwest 40th and 42nd Avenues and Southwest Galburn and Alfred Streets in the plan. This slide shows our town center area, and in the colors is the proposed comprehensive plan designations. It also shows a 20-minute walk shed and the town center boundary. So the comprehensive plan, this is a comprehensive plan designated town center, and the comp plan policies guide planning for these areas, and they got, and the policies include noting that there should be a concentration of commercial services, social services, and amenities and housing within a half mile radius of the center. And so while also acknowledging that each center is different, it guides plans to work with the characteristics and context of each town center. So this next slide just shows the same things that you just saw, and I had two slides because there's a lot going on. And on this one, we added the half mile radius, so you could sort of see both the half mile sort of linear radius and then the 20 minute walk shed in blue here. And that's more of a walk shed that's sensitive to the transportation barriers that exist in the area, which include I-5 and Barber, et cetera. So, So when we were looking at what areas to include within the town center, we considered many things, obviously the policy guidance about the half mile radius and the 20 minute walk shed to sort of start to understand what's accessible to the central portion of the town center. And we use the walk shed, but we acknowledge that that is not right. It doesn't apply to everybody. There's plenty of folks who that is not realistic for, but we have to have some kind of foundation that we can use across different areas. And so we look at that. We looked at the distance for, you know, what the distance was from Barber Boulevard and Capitol Highway, two of the main streets in this area and where there is the best transit service in the town center, the most frequent transit service, I should say. And then we also looked at, you know, the other connecting roads, Taylor's Ferry and Huber, which connect to other areas in the surrounding area. So we considered all of those as along with the area's topography, because there are a lot, of hills here on and off the main corridors. And we also looked at, as I said, the transportation barriers and, you know, the proposed or the recommended improvements along those lines, right? And those transportation facilities, and as well as sort of what the stormwater and sewer infrastructure was like. So we basically took all that into account, but it's not a formula, right? And so, but using that context, we came up with the town center boundary that we have. And then here in red, you can see the area that was in the red circle raised as the area of concern. So we believe that that it's appropriate to have this area within the town center for the reasons that we've shown here. And then just for additional context, since we talked at length about the pink areas and the phasing, here it is again shown where in that phasing map where it's located. Okay, the next topic we're going to touch on is around affordability and displacement and how the plan approaches that. It's a big topic. And Commissioner Hardesty asks us some good questions, made some really good remarks, and also asked a question about, you know, the upcoming rent increases in the range of that 14%, which is significant, and whether we know how many people in the West Portland Town Center area would be priced out of existing low-cost market rate housing by these potential rent increases. And after considering it and looking at what information we do have access to, you know, we have to say that we don't know. Much of our data is at a higher level. We don't have household level data necessarily. And it also sometimes it's more backward looking. It doesn't help us necessarily predict easily what's going to happen. So, you know, whether it's a rent survey or census data. So, but we do know that housing stability and displacement are complex issues and can be supported and impacted by many factors. Knowing what we do about past dynamics and the data, we are working with organizations that can that have a direct connection with community that is experiencing this displacement pressure every day. And so that is, we felt, an important part of our understanding of the situation. We think we have been very clear with the community that we've worked with on this plan, that the plan is not an end-all be-all. It's one piece of the puzzle. And that we're trying to move the needle in the right direction for housing stability and other improvements that strengthen that stability and the community. So other things in addition to the plan's work and having the right numbers, collaboration is needed and funding collaboration amongst jurisdictional partners to help put together the other pieces of the puzzle. And I want to note this because it's as much an issue in West Portland as it is for other parts of the city. You know, we need funding and collaboration and partnership for acquisition of existing buildings, low-cost market rate buildings, or affordable regulated buildings that are going, they're expiring, developing new regulated affordable housing, collaborate, co-locating social services, making access to opportunities, choices, and a choice for everyone in the community. And in the case of West Portland Town Center, very specifically, you know, collaboration and funding for infrastructure improvements, because oftentimes infrastructure deficits are a problem, make it really, they impact the viability of not just affordable housing, but all types of other beneficial projects. So within those, within the parameters of what a land use plan can do, the proposal includes a range of approaches intended to contribute to improving improving the displacement and regulated housing dynamic in the town center, while also acknowledging that there is no one tool or fix to address displacement and housing stability. I'm going to pass it over to my colleague, Bill Cunningham, who will next highlight again some of the approaches that the plan is taking. We also have virtually our colleague, Matt Shebold in the Housing Bureau, in case there are any questions, and he would also be glad to make some remarks as well. I'll hand it over.
All right. So I'm basically going to provide a pretty brief recap of some of the anti-displacement and affordable housing promoting provisions of the plan, especially its the zoning map and zoning code provisions. And it is true what's been raised before in terms of the limits of the statewide rent control plus allowances for inflation on top of that. It's hard to guarantee that people will not be impacted by the whims of the marketplace. And so that's why a key objective of the zoning code amendments was to create new tools to bring more units into regulated affordable housing, so less subject to some of those whims. Some of the things we're doing, and Joan alluded to a number of them, I think at a very basic level, one thing we're doing was really working to expand housing options. And this is very much in keeping with city policies to expand housing options in our town centers, especially since that's where services are often concentrated. And the plan proposals increase multi-dwelling zoning to expand housing options, add a broader range of affordability levels than are possible in the single dwelling zones that predominate currently in the area. And over time, it will allow more people to live closer to the services of the town center. And regardless of whether light rail is built, the Barber Transit Center is Southwest Portland's most significant transit hub. So it is definitely an access to services and transit location that is important for expanding housing opportunities for. Wanted to relate to some of the strategies that are fairly directly oriented towards supporting the preservation of existing low-cost housing where they exist in the area. And that's especially in the West Portland neighborhood where there are a lot of affordable apartments. And this is a very new approach to the way we do town center zoning. Typically, we just apply higher density zoning in whatever location is close to the core of an area. In this case, larger scale development is directed away from locations where there are existing low cost apartments to reduce pressures for development of those properties. And this is really in keeping with the community's interest in having the plan contribute to housing stability for the area's lower income, often people of color residents. And some of the tools, besides doing some reduction in the development allowances in those properties, we have some regulatory tools really oriented towards a 60% of area median income affordability level. There are provisions where, in exchange for a property owner committing to preserving those units as affordable at that 60% AMI level, they can transfer development rights or sell development rights to other properties in the area, such as the mixed use zone. So potentially gain value through the preservation of the affordability. And in that, for those properties, that area, the only allowances that allow development to get larger scale than what's already there are bonuses targeted at affordability at a 60% of area median income level. And it's really to ensure that replacement housing is at least replacing what's lost in terms of existing affordable units. Elsewhere in the plan district, where the preservation isn't quite the priority, there's a pretty major prioritization of inclusionary housing and affordable units as a means for development to get larger. And this, frankly, is a new approach too, that we're really putting out there for the first time as part of this plan. Really, the primary way for development scale to become greater is by providing affordable units. Inclusionary housing bonuses must be utilized before any other bonuses or transfers of development rights can be used. And currently, you can transfer and gain additional scale by a variety of mechanisms. But for this area, inclusionary housing is the first stop, the first place you need to go and meet those requirements before greater scale is allowed. Affordability level there is a bit broader. Inclusionary housing is targeted for affordability at a 60% to 80% of area median income level, which is still pretty affordable for that that area of town. And I think with that, I'm going to pass it on to Joan, unless there's some specific questions over what I just shared there.
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to invite Matt Schaubold. I don't know if he wanted to add anything to our comments.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of council. For the record, Matthew Schaubold with the Housing Bureau. Just a couple of comments. I just wanted to thank BPS for the partnership on this. They partnered with us on the Southwest Corridor Equitable Housing Strategy back in 2019. And they've continued the partnership with the West Portland Town Center. We're supportive of what is before you today. We think that, you know, when the Housing Bureau looks at our affordable housing programming, we look at it along a spectrum, and we know that our direct financing needs to be focused at 30 and 60% AMI, and that programs like inclusionary housing and other incentive programs can focus at the 60, 80, and higher percent AMI levels. And so we appreciate the innovative approach that BPS put together here with this proposal. They worked very closely with community, and I think did a good job at trying to take the goals of the community and put them into the zoning code. So appreciate it, and happy to answer any questions that members of council have.
Thank you, Matt.
Looks like we're all questioned out. Thank you, Matthew. Does that complete the staff presentation?
Almost, not quite.
Almost. We wanted to provide
I just want to make a comment. Right. Yeah. Thank you, Matt Schaubold, for being on the call. And thank you for all collaborating between the last session. These are wonderful results. Thanks.
Bill.
All right. I wanted to provide a very brief overview of the minor amendments we have before you. And we did not receive requests for amendments from a commissioner's office. And these are minor amendments that staff identified that will improve the plan. Number one, the first is really just amending a regulation that was intended to apply to commercial storefronts to clarify it only applies in commercial areas, not to residential areas along our commercial corridors. And number two, it's just correcting an incorrect code reference. And three and four are basically housekeeping amendments to the citywide design guidelines document, updating the table of contents, and a very minor edit to some explanatory text. So no actual changes to guidelines that have any force of law, just basically administrative corrections. And that's all we have for you.
All right, great. Thank you for the presentation. We appreciate it. Commissioner Rubio, I suspect you may be making a motion related to some of these technical amendments. But before we jump to that, I just want to find out if anybody else has any further questions for staff. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to make a motion to approve the technical amendments presented by staff as amendments to the recommended draft.
Commissioner Rubio makes a motion to approve the technical amendments.
Second.
Provided. Commissioner Ryan jumps in to second. Is there any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
This isn't the most dynamic conversation we've had this week, but I also know that you put a ton of effort into this, and the commissioner's staff has too. And so I really want to appreciate that and applaud that. Thanks for putting this together the way you have done so. I'm happy to vote aye. And the amendment is adopted. So thank you to everyone who worked so hard on this and shared your testimony on the West Portland Town Center plan. We're not quite over the finish line here. This item will be continued to our regular council session on Wednesday, November 16th at 10:25 a.m. time certain. At that meeting, we'll vote on the recommended plan as amended, the ordinance, and the findings. Thank you, everybody. That concludes our meeting this afternoon, and we are adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.